Holy shit, honestly, I don't know what show this is because all the hosts happen to be here tonight. That's right, guys. Welcome back. It's time for another episode of Inside the Game, episode 23 on this nearly final day of November. Tomorrow is the 30th, the final day, which, of course, Counter-Strike GO comes out. I understand that you're all very, very excited about that, the beta.
They aren't. I am.
It's okay. So it's okay. You don't have to hold it back anymore, Idra. You can just be like, yes, man, the day I've been waiting for. No, I'm just kidding. So, anyway, guys. What's up? What, Scooch?
Hey,
everybody. Okay. All right, Scooch. All right. Thanks a lot, dickhead. God. Next time he gives Slasher any shit, man, I'm going to remember this moment. What's up, guys? No, seriously, welcome back. I know it's been a long few weeks of traveling and, got everything else. I mean, competitions for you guys. Idra, you just got back. I know you've been casting your heart out over there, Pain User. In Control, been doing coaching, streaming, all that good stuff. So, guys, what's up? How's it going?
It's going good.
You can't just do that open thing. They're all waiting to talk.
No, I want to see who's going for it first, In Control. Like,
happy belated Thanksgiving, guys.
Yes.
Spent some time with family. Had a good Thanksgiving. I know I did.
Me too.
It's an awesome Thanksgiving weekend.
Sweden.
You guys do anything special at the EG house? You guys want to make some turkey?
They all
went
left
to DreamHack.
Yeah. Oh, everybody's
did you have any turkey at DreamHack?
I had chili dogs for Thanksgiving.
Aw.
Chili dogs.
They're delicious.
Turkey?
they're delicious.
There was all meats and hot dog wheat, so I was actually completely covered.
That's very true. It's very true. You're all good. What, Idra, Thanksgiving and DreamHack, was it just kind of like, okay, it's all good?
We didn't have DreamHack, or didn't have Thanksgiving. It's in Europe. They're all heathens. They don't celebrate it, so.
Well, I mean,
we didn't really have much.
No, like, little personal
heathens.
Anything.
No, I don't even know which day it was on. I guess it's always on Thursday, so that was, like, the night we got in, so. Yeah, me, Chris, and Puma were practicing at a PC cafe. We had monsters. That was our
celebration.
There
you go. There you go. It's kind of like turkey a little bit, but
it was really fun. Our PC cafe, they thought it was really cool to give us monsters for free because we were sponsored by them. They thought that was the best thing ever. So we got monster.
I have another monster.
That's they're awesome, on your actually. Shirt.
That's pretty awesome.
That's pretty cool.
Oh, and when'd you get back, actually?
Two days ago, I think.
All right, so readjusting again.
Yeah, just in time to leave for NASL and then Korea. So,
dude, all fun. So we'll talk more about both those things here pretty soon. And we could just jump right into things. We got some questions. I want to open the phone lines tonight. I mean, we are just going to start things off with pretty much just straight up discussion about DreamHack Winter that happened. A few days ago, Idra, you were there competing for it. I got a question for you, man, because I watched it, right? Or I tried to watch as much as I could. I mean, with like 80 billion streams, to be honest, it was a little difficult, but it was still awesome. How was the double, like, group stage for you?
Well, obviously, for me, it sucked ass because we got the three EGs in one group.
Well, right, right.
And it was played, like, really early in the morning when me and Chris both had the latest groups the night before, so we were on, like, 6 hours of sleep. So that sucked ass. Otherwise, I think it's actually a pretty good system because normally you have this problem where either you do double elim and it's a much more robust format, but then you have the problem of how do you do the finals fair. It's usually either really anticlimactic, someone has a massive advantage, or you just disregard the fact that someone came from the winner bracket, which isn't fair either. Or you do single elim, which gets rid of that, but then, you know, one loss and you're out, which also kind of sucks. So having, going further with group stages, I think that's a really good thing, actually.
As a spectator, I thought it was really fantastic on the first and second day just to, like, watch and the amount of games that you could actually, I mean, that you could tune into is pretty insane.
I'm a huge fan of heart rate monitors, man.
What's that?
The heart rate monitors.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool. I'm kind of sad I didn't get to the finals because I want to see what mine would have been.
What do you think
like
it would have been?
Even 75 the whole time.
Yeah, I think it would stay pretty.
It had this, like, spike up to 200 and then would instantly, like, come back down. And then it would be like, what happened?
Void ray shows up 7,000.
Idra was just dead for about 10 seconds, but he came back, so we're good.
Yeah, Puma was kind of chill.
Space stayed like sun cold, but his heart rate spiked to like 210.
It was change. Would you guys like to see it now? A little history lesson. So I was wrong. I originally thought it was like 6 years ago, but it's actually 8 years ago that ESWC in France did the exact same thing. But guys, no shit. They had to put on these vests that weighed like 20 pounds.
Yeah, see, if they tried that, I wouldn't have played.
So I wasn't really able to see, but I didn't see them wearing a bull. I mean, literally, it looked like a fucking Kevlar vest when these guys were wearing it.
Red said they just put a little string about them or something.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. Chest. Okay.
I don't know. I guess I like that people liked it, but personally speaking, okay.
Sure.
Take off the community hat for a second. It annoys me, just because anytime you put any of those kind of numbers up there, every time you watch a stream, and of course my first issue is looking at the chat or any of that shit, but the threads on Reddit and team, like, they're like, check out this heart rate. Look how high this got. Oh, the heart rate. Let's, you know, and it's like, I don't know, I thought it was dumb. I think it'd be funny to run a tournament and have, like, the wind chill listed there, and then, like, below that is, like, you know, the rainfall for the continent or some shit, and just have people talk about it, because they would.
Measure the temperature of their hands.
Do you think the Colossus 2-base rush works better when there's more of a wind chill? Because I was just noticing something. Okay, follow me through here. And like, you're going to get that shit. But I don't know, if people like it, let them have it. It just annoys me.
I mean, there is certainly like something right. If we think back to, do you guys remember when Fox tried to like innovate hockey on television? Do you guys remember this?
No.
And what they did is they put a fucking microchip into the, you know, into the puck, right? So when the puck hit a certain velocity on TV, it would like make a yellow streak so that people could follow it.
Seriously?
Do you still see that shit today? No, because it was pretty much a novelty. Like people were still able to follow the gist of the game.
All right, that being said, though, the cool thing about the heart rate monitor is that if you continue to build stats like that over time, you can find trends amongst players. So you could be like, oh, this player obviously gets really nervous during these situations of the game. This guy's a stone-cold killer. Like you could already find trends amongst players.
Like, Hiro is a player who's known for being really, really nervous and, like, just having problems with nerves. And his heart rate was through the roof, like, right from the start of the semifinal. So, yeah, it was definitely, like, you could read things into it. It wasn't just a random stat. I think it's, as far as things to add to a broadcast, I think that's one of the better ones.
How about this?
Yeah, I think it's cool. It definitely, like, it you can match it with players' personalities and like, find out a little bit more about them.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this question then, paid user. Would IGN be worse if at the next IPL they didn't have heart rate monitors?
Shit.
absolutely not.
Well, I mean,
I'm just saying it's like a cool, like you said, it's a novelty.
We'll play devil's advocate here for a second, because obviously, I've already said I don't really have a strong opinion one way or the other. Just that it personally annoys me. But one of the criticisms against StarCraft II, when held to the light of Brood War, two separate games, I understand that, is that in Brood War we had a lack of information, right? I didn't see a production tab. I didn't know what was coming out when.
Absolutely.
Like, there just wasn't as much information. In StarCraft II, to a certain extent, some people say there's too much information. I know exactly what's going on. So there's not quite as much of a climax of, oh my god, he switched to Mutalisk. The whole world's over. Like, now when there's, you know, more information coming out, maybe it reduces the excitement of the cast. Does a heart rate do that? I don't necessarily know, but I am applying a slippery slope here. If we continue to add more information, it becomes, I'm just witnessing two guys doing that exact, I know exactly what's happening, in less of a broadcast.
Okay. Well, let's talk about a couple other things. Unless anyone wants to talk about some notable matches, I think one of the most notable, obviously the finals, with an EG Liquid final as this sort of staged rivalry continues to play itself out in the world of StarCraft II. I just want to hear your guys' thoughts on that.
I hate to say I told people so, but the 1-1-1 was eventually going to get figured out. people were going to figure out how to stop it. It was just a matter of time.
And you think that was the downfall?
Well, didn't
he didn't do the one-on-one.
I think he did it. I didn't see the match, but I think he did it on dual site, which was a bad decision because he did it to Night End on the same map the series before, so Hero was expecting it.
Well, he tried. He got murdered, actually, before he could get out of his base.
Oh. Yeah, I didn't see the final, so I don't know.
His Banshee got shut down for free, and then he actually didn't have enough units to take the attack that was coming up his ramp. I mean, Hero, it was total metagame. Like, the build Hero was doing was fucking, I know exactly what you're doing, and I'm coming after you. Like, if you could know a build beforehand, this is the build you'd do, and so it was pretty crazy.
Yep.
What do you guys think about the rivalry between Liquid and EG?
It's mostly just a construction of the community. I mean, we're two of the biggest, in terms of, like, publicity and fan bases and all that, we're probably the two biggest foreign teams. So, of course, there's going to be that. And we also have kind of, like, Evil Genius is meant to be, like, the bad guys, and Liquid's, like, the good guys, which is kind of retarded, but that's what the community sees. So, of course, they're going to set us against each other. But, no, I mean, we all hang out together. We're all friends. We don't play each other that much.
You got Evil in your name.
Well,
no, it's because of Greg.
No, I mean, we don't even play each other that much at events because Liquid players tend to lose a lot, so I don't know.
Oh. Fueling the rivalry, man.
Hero,
fucking throwing
Hero
the gasoline.
Hero and Kuma hit each other a few times, and I think actually one of the comments I've known that's come out of Hero in the past has been that he's kind of upset because I guess in practice he says he beats Puma more than he loses to him, but in tournaments, I think they've hit each other three times since joining foreigner teams, and Puma's up 2-1 in the series. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure that's true. So that was, you know, there's a little bit of rivalry there, but it's friendly between them. They're like brothers. They basically love each other. And then as far as Team Liquid and EG, it's a lot like Greg said. It's mostly community. We're kind of painted as the evil guys. And I feel like that's more like a Yankees versus everybody else kind of thing. Like, our team's the one that people, you know, consider, you know, more wealthy and just working harder and acquiring the bigger name players, that kind of stuff. So it's easier to dislike us, but also like us globally because we're the team that's putting it most out there.
Sure.
And then Team Liquid's kind of always going to have that hero of the community type of emblem to them because they have the community website attached to them, but also they do a good job of marketing their players as like a bunch of fun-loving good guys. Like if I'm to regard TLO, he's like this goofy, eccentric German who talks about fashion. And then Chef is Mr. Good Guy. Brett has this adorable, like, lopsided grin on his face, but never says a word. Who knows what he's actually about? Just wears wood shoes around the house. Jinro is, like, trying to be a badass, but it's like 90210 badass, where it's like, Jesus, I wish, you know, he would never ride off with my daughter type of thing, but at the same time, he could punch, like, a tissue box and break his knuckle or something like that.
He's punched a hole in a wall, so I don't know about that one.
Ah, bam! You know?
Nah, dude. Jinro's Lance Armstrong. He always looks like he's about to go. He looks like he's about to go bike the Tour de France.
Keep going.
He's got his biking glasses on and his running shoes.
You did go through everyone.
April, it's like he looks like a live action version of a Winnie the Pooh character. Like he was pulled out of that cartoon and made to real life. So it should have been like Winnie the Pooh, the Donkey, Piglet, and then Hey Pro. That's the full cast. And then Tigger. Forgot about Tigger.
Tigger. Who could be Hey Pro?
they sort of.
Believe it or not, they could be.
No.
And then they got Zenyo. So that's going to make their complexion a little bit weird because Zenyo would be like the kind of, I mean, how would you describe him, Greg?
He's kind of a dick, and he's not very good.
You know what? I mean, I don't mean to be that guy, but in all honesty, I think my biggest memory of Zenyo is actually a game he played versus you in GSL, Greg.
Oh, of course. That's all anyone remembers.
It's literally where he just fucking, like, contaminated your hatcheries, and then that literally is probably one of the biggest memories of Zenyo I have.
The backhand celebration game. Man, ever. Game.
Yeah. On the flip side, awesome. It's also an Indra memory, I suppose, too. It's just not as good a one, you know.
I thought it was great. I thought it was the innovative strat on his part.
I remember being pretty crazy when that was like a year ago. Like, holy shit.
Oh, God, what map was that on that terrible, terrible map? That
Delta
removed?
Quadrant.
Yes.
Delta
Quadrant. Yes. Yeah. There's a lot that we could talk about regarding DreamHack, and I want to give an opportunity if there's anything else you wanted to discuss. I thought they did a great job with the coverage, like absolutely so many different streams to watch. Choose your casters, choose your game. I had like four different streams open at once. I thought it was great from that presentation-wise, so I want to say big shout out to DreamHack, great job. But
yeah.
One of the interesting things that came out of it was this whole slasher debacle with the casters and players needing to retire before they cast. And I felt like it was actually a really, really interesting thing for us to discuss, considering that all three of you guys just happened to have casted with me for the Evil Geniuses Masters Cup and even in other scenarios as well. I mean, obviously, Jeff, you did the Texas Esports Association competition. Idra, you did some GSL as well. Both you guys did NASL. Pain User doing some IPL. So it seems like there's no better group of people to actually discuss this topic than the three dudes that host this show. So
qualified people discussing a slasher subject might be a little bit of a
embarrassment.
Yeah, that would be...
And so I want to, I mean, Jeff, I know that you kind of brought it up, right before the show began. Do you want to take first crack at it? Maybe even give, sort of anyone who might be tuning in and not know exactly what this is all about, a breakdown, and then we can take it from there.
Sure. Well, there's a couple threads on Reddit, but mostly it's actually a thread on Team Liquid as well. It's a conversation took place on Twitter between our own Chris Loranger and, Slasher. And Slasher had made a comment on his show, aptly named F Slasher, because that's really the only attitude you should have. And basically what he was saying was he didn't, like, here's the problem with it. He was saying players that haven't retired should not commentate. And then people are like, poor K, why? And he's like, well, it takes away from their practice and they're not going to be very good at it. But also, if they can't commit to casting, they're not going to be a good caster either. Which was a really weird time to bring it up, because he was bringing it up in reference to Chef and TLO casting DreamHack, but then he also made references to every instance, you know, Home Story Cup, and really, like, the only applicable example, I would think, would be Pain User or myself casting full-time for, NASL, IPL, respectively. Aside from that, it's like a stupid comment. It's fantastic when a player gets in the booth and commentates for an hour or two out of their career, you know, like... I'll obviously leave the opinions to everybody else, but that's where Slasher's coming from. And I think this is one of the few occurrences where Slasher is universally wrong. Most of the time, he's just mostly wrong, but this time it was like a crushing, deafening feeling of, oh my god, I just said the opposite of true. And I think that's what Slasher did.
The general consensus, and personally having cast with all three of you, you know, I think you're phenomenal casters, each having its own sort of unique set of skills to bring to the table, but obviously one of them is the game knowledge, is the experience, especially, you know, the In Control and Andrew you guys bring from Brood War, and Pain User, you certainly having your success in the game as well. So I want to hear Pain User's thought, and then we'll kind of hear what Idra has to say about it. Because Pain User, you also are working full time while sort of maintaining playing as well.
Well, I mean, the longer I do it, the more I have to make a discerning choice between one or the other. And lately, it's been more casting and. I think there's merit to what Slasher said, but I completely agree with Jeff. I think he's wrong, but I think he phrased it poorly. Like, the way I would describe it, or put it rather, is that as a caster and as a player, there's like tons of different varying skill levels in different categories, right? So when I first got into casting, I had tons of game knowledge, I had tons of experience, but I was terrible at the hosting aspect of it, the professionalism aspect of it, plugging sponsors, making sure it ran smoothly, working with different co-casters and vibing with them and making sure that we had a good rapport with one another. So, I mean, if you just grab any random player with no experience casting and you throw them into the booth, it's probably not going to be the best cast in the world, but they still have a wealth of knowledge to offer the community. So if it's like a... if it's a cast that's centered around educating people about the game, or it's like a really in-depth analysis type thing, then I totally understand it. But if it's a big tournament and there's, you know, tens of thousands of dollars on the line, I think you should put experienced casters in there and have a really high quality cast. But that being said, a player can certainly cast at the same time, and players like CLO, Greg, have experience casting and playing, so you know they've done both. It's not like you're just throwing them in there for the first time. I'm not sure if Sheth has much experience casting or not. I think he might have casted one or two things in the past, but
well, I think the problem with Slash's statement is that he painted it with a broad stroke, right? He said players who haven't retired should not commentate. Like, there is examples of players who are full-time commentating, so obviously they're going to be less of a player, right? Like yourself and me during NESL and a few other people, but that's not what he's getting at. He was bringing it up in criticism to the DreamHack tournament, allowing TLO and or not allowing, inviting. It's not like they were like, "Can we please commentate?" They're like, "Well, all right." They asked those guys to cover for a sick Tasteless. But there's a couple of huge problems with that. Like, first of all, it's MLG Slasher criticizing DreamHack, and then he actually and that would be unfair of me to say if it weren't for the fact that Slasher then took the next step and was like, I think MLG does it correctly, where they will not hire players to commentate.
Well, and you know, there's something to be said here, right? Because there is traditionally, or has been for many, many years, and actually, I always remember WCG, right, was one of the first organizations to sort of put this rule out there, and I appreciated them for doing it, is that they felt like in order to uphold the integrity of the entertainment of what they were broadcasting, they would not let a player commentate until they were eliminated from the competition, which I felt like, you know, was like, it was really fair, because sure, you might get some bias, and I think that's in the long run what people at like WCU is a little bit worried about, but it made sense. You won't fuck up the tournament structure and make someone late because they happen to be commentating a game or something, you know, to be said about that. So, you know, as far as that's concerned, like, I think that MLG runs a tight production ship, and that's the other side of it that's interesting, right? Because would you ever really want to put like two casters up there who are players that maybe don't have a hosting experience? Because that's where I think you really start to run into muddy waters. As far as I'm concerned, casting with a player, in my opinion, is fucking remarkable. You know, I told each of you individually, like, I learned more about the game from a deeper level when I casted with you guys over the course of the Masters Cup. And that was just quite simply because you really were going to a level that, you know, typically the average broadcast is not necessarily going to, unless it's really focused that way.
Yeah, what Taylor said especially is, for analytical casting, players are excellent. The valid point here is that players who don't have a lot of experience with casting, which is 99% of them, it's really hard to run a show with production in your ear and like doing the host aspect, driving the show and plugging sponsors and throwing to various things and all that if you're not experienced with it. But the thing that really bothered me was he was going at it, like Jeff said, broad strokes. He was saying, absolutely. And he even tweeted saying that the best analytical casters are like Artosis, Day, Tasteless, Apollo, Rotterdam. That's just absolutely fucking wrong. Like, when Home Story Cup, they have all the players casting constantly. You see 99% of the comments about it are how the inside is so much better and all that. And it's just, it makes sense. Like, the people who are playing the game every day professionally, of course they're going to know more about the game than the casters. And there's nothing wrong with that, but that is the way it is. The players do make better analytical casters because they understand the game on a deeper level. It's just, the casters aren't able to do that because they're busy managing everything else. And it's no fault of theirs, but that's the way it is. And for Slasher to try and say otherwise is pretty stupid.
As far as Home Story Cup is concerned, because it was brought up several times, and personally, I had a blast watching Home Story Cup. It was something unique and really something that I felt like I'd never really seen in esports before, period. Whether it was StarCraft II or anything, right? However,
it was very player-centric.
Yeah, you're right. I also feel like... It probably, if every tournament was like that, it may not be my cup of tea. It may be someone's cup of tea, right? Like, a lot of people were saying that, dude, if every tournament was like Home Story Cup, it'd be the fucking bomb. And I guarantee you that that's the case. But I'm not sure that, like, that would make a good Barcraft sort of, you know, type broadcast, per se.
Right. You really need a host or a play-by-play guy, or well, both, to make it better for the more casual viewer. Like, the dedicated esports audience will love Home Story Cup, but someone who really needs a lower-level caster to bring them into the game and make it exciting for them, that's not their cup of tea. I think Home Story is a great one-off event, but the more standard models, better.
And then also, like, on top of that, players that switch into casting, at least for me, my knowledge of the other matchups before really getting into casting was terrible. Because I just didn't care. You know, Protoss versus X, Zerg versus X, it wasn't that interesting to me, unless it was versus Terran, right? But then when I really got into casting, I started watching all the different matchups and started watching hundreds and hundreds of replays, and your knowledge of all the other matchups that you don't play personally just goes through the roof. You really actually start to understand them over a longer period of time. And I feel like players that play a specific race have a very biased sense of casting if they don't have a lot of experience casting, as far as the other matchups are concerned. It has to be difficult for a Terran player who that doesn't have a ton of experience casting to jump into like a ZVP finals and be like giving knowledgeable analytical casting about it.
And that could really go both ways as well. I mean, from the player and the
depends
casting,
on the player. Right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Some players know a lot about all the races. I consider myself one of those guys, but there definitely are people who just, you know, I think Stefano would be the first to say that he probably doesn't know a whole lot about a TVP. He'd be like, "What is this stupid shit? No Zergs."
and you know, with that being said, I don't know that we need to spend much more time on it. I think you guys all three are great casters.
Can we end with a unified fuck slasher?
Yeah.
I think we all pretty much said the exact same thing.
Pretty much.
As far as our answer was concerned. Like,
let's do it. Let's do like a countdown: 3, 2, 1. Fuck slasher, and then also hope that the chat will type fuck slasher into their chat.
A global
simultaneously.
Fuck slasher.
Hit enter the moment that we are also saying fuck slasher.
Everyone should do it on Twitter as well.
Exactly. Exactly.
Please. Slasher.
We're
going to do fuck slasher bomb, right?
We're going to do it. It's going to be a giant fucking bomb. Okay. Is everyone ready? I'm even going to get my thing right. Okay. We're going to do it in 3, 2, 1. Fuck slasher. Yep. There it goes. I cannot wait. I wish I could see. Oh, I like it. I like it. So,
tweet it.
Oh, look at chat. Oh, man.
That's a lot of fuck slash.
Oh, that is quite a bit. There it is.
Thank you, guys.
There
Thank
it
you
is.
For contributing.
Yeah. That's what see.
Hey, hang on. Wait for the one guy. Ready? He's going to go, "You know, guys, we probably shouldn't use such language, and this could really hurt his feelings." Wait for it.
Kind of impressive what you get the community to do. The entire chat is filled.
I know. I mean, people even started to get original, you know, like adding more like that cunt to the end of it as well. So, oh god! All right. Well, let's.
Leave him alone. Oh god!
That was good.
That was pretty good. Can't wait, DreamHack. Greg, the Dream Arena. Did you see it? What did you think? How did you like the host? All that good stuff.
I don't remember much about the host. The one thing I really liked was having the additional four casters on the couch and just having them bullshit between the games. I thought that was really cool. Like, they're all big personalities that everyone loves. Sitting there and listening to them talk about it is really cool. The arena was nice.
Hilarious.
You thought what, Pain User?
I think Rotterdam is hilarious.
Oh. Rotterdam?
He wasn't there, but he
Rotterdam
is.
Rotterdam wasn't there.
Whoops.
I thought he was there.
No.
Nope.
Who are you?
You know what? In Pena's defense, all Europeans, pretty much the same guy. So.
No. Who's the guy hosting Home Story?
Oh, not Rotterdam, dude. Holy shit. It was... His name
Dennis
is Tej. Tej?
Dennis.
T-E-J... BZ, Tej. Okay, what? You know what, guys? I realize, guys, that this guy's like a fucking baller. Okay, like from what I understand, he's got, you know, a million gazillion views. Like five. This guy is like the husky of COD, right? He's just got a shitload of YouTube subscribers. etc. However, ladies and gentlemen, hold on. Let me go back to my camera because I feel like I need you guys to look me in the eyes and understand this. Ladies and gentlemen, just because someone has 500,000 subscribers on YouTube does not mean that they know how to handle a crowd of thousands. And this was made very evident this weekend when I went through the excruciating moments in between matches where I saw the host get trolled, fumble, use slang that I thought was actually put to rest back in the 90s. I was really, really shocked. And I mean, unfortunately, and I think the guys at DreamHack do a great job, this was probably the one and only complaint that I would have from a spectator point of view. It was a little uncomfortable. I can only imagine.
I don't think anyone would defend him, the poor guy, too. He just. But I want to hit on your point where you open up by saying the guy's got a lot of fault. I mean, he obviously does something really well, right? Like, he's wildly successful at what he does. But I think esports has this weird misconception where if you do anything in esports really, really well, that must mean you can do everything in esports really, really well. So there's a lot of these guys who are asked to host things when that's like just 1,000% nothing like they've ever done in their life. So why would we ever think that they could do that, you know? Like, Jeff Gordon's a fantastic NASCAR driver. He must be able to hit in the Major League Baseball. We should get him in there.
Right, no. Right. And that was kind of a, I mean, I feel sorry for a little bit of this, you know, it's kind of funny. I mean, no offense to anyone, but between Lindsay, between Randy, and now between Dennis, I mean, we have the most ridiculous, awkward esports hosting opportunity things going on.
I think we should just have Toogood host everything. I think that would fix all the problems.
At one point, Toogood actually was like, "Oh, host, should I take over?" And I think most people are saying, "Yeah, I think you kind of should." So, anyway, with that being said, DreamHack, there you go. What about the couch thing? You guys like
brilliant.
That at all?
Like Greg said, it's weird that it took this. I mean, it took, you know, a year of StarCraft II, I guess what I say. I won't speak to the larger part, because I'm sure other organizations have done the same kind of thing, but for StarCraft II to take this long to have put, you know, all the personalities at the event on a couch and have them commentate between games and have them throw to each other, really, really freaking awesome. Really smart idea, really good. I thought Day9 did a pretty good job of kind of grabbing, either he was designated that role or he just took it because he's kind of a natural leader, but he did a good job, like, delegating, you know, throwing to the people inside the group, but then also throwing back the tasteless and stuff. It made it real seamless. I do want to. It was. I don't know if you guys read Team Liquid. Of course, I'm the one that has to bring this up, so I'll just do it. I'm on vacation, so I could take the heat. Total Biscuit made a blog talking about how kind of out of place he felt doing that. I mean, he talked about a lot of things, but one of the things he talked about was. Yeah, it's on Team Liquid. It was like DreamHack post-mortem or something like that is what he was talking about. Well, but he kind of said that he felt kind of off because he was around all these people that know so much about StarCraft 2, but he didn't have much to offer. So I felt bad because in hindsight it kind of shown that, like, oh yeah, the match against Apollo, it's so cool just to see the cohesive units forging together. And then, you know, Peter would be like, I thought this player did a fantastic job. And then they go to Total Biscuit and goes, stunning. Gorgeous. And then they go away. I felt bad. I felt like it was out of time.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you definitely have to understand the game to a certain extent, or at least play it. I mean, you can't not understand the game. Like, Total Biscuit has beautiful play-by-play, and he's a very verbose, like, good talker. He can keep the energy level up, but you have to understand the game, and it's definitely evident that he doesn't. And when you throw him in a situation like that with a bunch of people who do understand the game, it's obviously gonna highlight the fact that he doesn't know anything about the game.
It's not even just that. Like, when it was Day9, Tasteless, Sartosis, and Bitter up there, Bitter actually probably plays competitively on a higher level than the other three. I know Bitter plays a lot, and he knows a lot about the game, but he didn't really talk that much because he was just kind of overshadowed by everyone else. On some level, it's just a personality thing. Like, Day 9, Tasteless and Artosis are the biggest personalities in the scene. And getting a word in when you're up there on a couch with the three of them, it's not too easy for anyone, regardless of game knowledge. So it's just like, those are the people everyone wants to see. They're the ones who do what they do very well. They're the ones who are going to be talking. And that's just kind of the way it is. And it'd be kind of silly to pass up on that entertainment just because there are others who don't do it quite as well. Everyone has their role, and that's what they're good at. So maybe you just put those three on the couch or something. But
Total Biscuit is a really good host. He's a funny guy. He's got a lot of personality, so people like to hear him talk. I would have loved to have had him play like the counterpart to Day 9, where Day 9 shoots to Rotterdam, and then Total Biscuit shoots to Mr. Bitter, but they prompt questions or like leads them on. You know, Total Biscuit's pretty close to those guys, so he could joke with them about something. I mean, there's just ways to get him involved, so I wish he had more confidence and felt comfortable up there. So I hope... Go ahead.
They should have designated him as more of a host role, like throwing to the other guys and letting them do their thing with his direction. That would have been the best way to do it, I guess.
I just wish he would have... I mean, I hope this concept continues to be utilized and built on, because I thought it was fantastic. And I don't want to see someone like Total Biscuit feel like he doesn't belong there, because I think he does. He just has to play his part, and if he did, I thought it would be this amazing, even better thing than what it was.
Right on. Any final comments, Pain User, on that?
No, not really. I really like the concept. I think it's awesome, and I think more tournaments should adopt it in the future. I mean, it's just good added content. Like, I think all the tournament organizations are just like one upping one another constantly at every event, and just adopting things from one another. So, I think you'll see more of that in the future. I don't think the heart monitor thing is going to be like added to a bunch of other tournaments.
I don't think.
I think the couch idea is definitely a good one.
You know, pretty soon, you guys will all be wearing bracelets. We'll be able to, like, track your every fucking movement when you're, like, you know, in your car. Be like, okay, we're going for Greg's autograph. All right, he just got done zipping up his pants in the bathroom. Go, go, go. Oh, by the way, his heart rate is 114 right now, so.
Don't always wait for that.
the urinal fan conversations are by far the worst. So if anyone out there ever thought of doing that, don't do that.
They're the worst.
Dude, you say that, Greg, and I feel like you've had five or six at least.
Yes, I am experienced on topic.
Like, no, the worst is like, hey man, I know this might be a really, really awkward time, but would you mind signing this? And you're like standing in line for the urinal. It's like, no.
That's when you just need to unzip your pants, Pain User.
If I was standing at the urinal, it'd be bad, but for me, still... Is food in hand. That's the weirdest one, where it's like,
anytime when you're very clearly doing something else, it's kind of weird.
Oh, okay. All right.
Slasher tweeted us, by the way.
Yeah, I saw. Wondering what the hell is going on.
Open access at tournaments, and like, especially depending on the format, like, a tournament like MLG, you know, we're all just kind of walking around, intermingling with all the fans constantly, so it's
right.
It's kind of weird. Eventually, I think there's going to be some separation between church and state in the future as it gets bigger and bigger. There have to be player areas, player lounges.
No, there has to be. Like,
there have to be. It's just a matter of time.
MLG having players like lose up on stage and then walk through the audience to get back to everyone else is fucking terrible. That needs to stop.
Yeah, yeah. It's like you don't want to do that. You want to go somewhere else.
Let's take
They're changing it up. It's going to be more exclusive at MLG next year, from what I understand. Like, it's not going to be 250 players. It should just be like 32 or 16, whatever they're going to do. And then hopefully better accommodations for the fewer players. And again, don't take my word as law, but that's just what I've heard. So hopefully that's somewhere along those lines.
Well, let's kind of shift gears a little bit. Thanks to everyone for your comments on DreamHack. We're going to talk a little bit about NASL. Which you guys got a few guys in the EG house that are heading on over there, Greg, you included. Who else is going? Huck and Puma?
Me, Huck and Puma, yeah.
Okay.
And a Muslim.
And a Muslim, that's right. Is he in the house right now? Is he there yet?
He's not in the house, but okay. No, he's heading straight to NASL, and I think he's coming back here.
Okay. Trying to bring up my page here. So NASL this weekend, guys. Definitely looking forward to it. Jeff, you know, obviously you were one that had a large role to play in the first season of NASL. There were some naysayers, some haters that even said, oh, there'll never even be a second season. But here it is already upon us. I'm excited to definitely be going there and participating since I wasn't able to in season one. But just want to hear maybe your thoughts, Jeff. NASL season two coming up.
I'm really excited. I've been talking to Russ, who's the owner. He's also the owner of GhostedCoaching.com. He's, you know, they're the tournament that gets kind of whipped around and criticized. It's just the way it's going to be. But he actually has a really optimistic feel to it. He said they got into the venue earlier this year, so they're going to work out those kinks and problems. But also they have the experience of the first season, so hopefully it's going to go really seamless. And for anyone that watched or was there, issues aside, the last NASL offline event was fantastic. They did an amazing job. And it's kind of their big hoorah, you know, so we're really excited about what it's going to look like this year. The posters that they're giving out look really cool. As far as me and kind of looking back on it, I'm happy for them because I have the behind-the-scenes perspective of everyone in that kind of grassroots movement who've been, like, really working at this and trying to make it big. And it's kind of, it's found its stride, you know? So, I mean, a lot of people talk about how they don't have 25,000 people watching every single night. And I don't think that's the kind of league it's going to be or ever was going to be. Like, it had the novelty aspect to a certain extent the first year. But after that, it's just going to be kind of one of those leagues that players are able to join. It's going to have some great matches. It's going to mean a lot. It's going to be one of the big offline events with a long online season. And they're going to do new things. They're going to be one of the innovating elements to our community. But I don't think they're going to replace an MLG or an IPL or anything like that. It's never going to be their role to do that. They're just going to be another great tournament that has a different structure. So, and I think they're fulfilling that role, and they're doing good, and they're happy.
And so I'm trying to bring up also that, and I kind of agree with you as far as the, you know, people have said, I've heard some criticism that, you know, certainly there people have not necessarily been as fond of the format. Some even say it's draining, but at least they follow their favorite players. But there's no doubt, like, at any time you put a live event together, and it's like, if you build it, they will come type of a mentality. I'm curious to hear what you think about the crowd this time around, considering that NASL was kind of one of the first ones right around when the StarCraft II crowd was growing along with MLG's crowd in comparison to where it was then versus where it is now. Do you expect that to have grown substantially?
We'll see. I mean, the NASL is kind of plagued with challenges, I think, more so than a lot of these other more established leagues. Like, the Koreans dropping out is a huge blow. So, I mean, a big attraction to that first season was going to see a boxer, going to see some of their favorite Korean players, where a lot of people are really attracted to them. So that's one of their challenges. The second season also has the challenge of, you know, it's no longer the first major grassroots tournament that the North American continent has produced. Now it's the second time. Or, you know, other tournaments have popped up. IPL kind of has that come out of nowhere feel to it as well. So the NASL can no longer depend on the novelty aspect. They have to depend on the quality of their broadcast, the quality of their casters, and the competition that they bring, which is obviously in part the prize pool, but also the players. I think they have the prize pool, and looking at that player list, I think they have the players. Now the question is, can they make sure and produce the production that they need to so that they're not that tournament that's just not as good as an MLG or IPL, right? Like, that would be the worst thing for them, where it's, oh, nice job, you know, you tried, it's pretty cool. It needs to be a seamless stream, great commentating, and innovative style, right? So they have 11 commentators there. I want to see a lot of them utilized, not just as casters or hosts, but maybe interviewers and that kind of stuff.
I certainly hope that I can contribute in any way. So I want to get Idris' perspective as a player. Not only do you have two teammates in your side of the bracket, it also looks like you have TBZ and then a potential TBZ team kill. Puma takes out Chet. Idris, your thoughts going into this?
I didn't go to the last NASL, and I didn't actually watch any of it. I was out of the town at the time, so right. I have... I just, I know almost nothing about what happened at the last finals, so I'm kind of going into this cold. The brackets, relative to the prize pool, this is probably the highest money to skill ratio of any tournament. So for me as a player, it's a really, really appealing thing to go into. Obviously, Puma and Hero and Huck are really, really good players, but you don't have the other top Korean players like MC and whichever other Koreans ascended last time. So it's a lot of good foreigners, but just good foreigners. So I feel like it's a really good opportunity for me. I'm really looking forward to competing. It sucks I'm going to have to play Puma second round, but at least Huck and Hero on the other side of the bracket, so that helps out a little bit.
So are you confident that this is a tournament that you feel like you could like certainly win? Like, you know, what's your confidence level there?
Oh, definitely capable. Certainly could happen. But me and Puma, the last two, we played both MLG and DreamHack.
Right.
And I won 2-1, then he won 2-1. So I think our match is really a toss-up, and whoever wins that is almost guaranteed to be in the finals against someone who either of us is capable of beating. Probably Hero. Capable of beating, but it'll be a hard match. But I definitely can win.
Pain user, I want to hear your thoughts. Anything that these two guys commented on or NASL in general?
I mean, they covered most of it. I'm really excited to see the matches without the Koreans. Like, the Koreans leaving and dropping out was a huge blow to them, but I've been an advocate of this for a long time, since day one. I think we can have North American tournaments without Koreans with awesome matches, especially at this
point. I'd agree.
And I think that the last couple MLGs have sort of shown that. So yeah, the Koreans have this huge novelty, but it's getting to the point now where we're creating our own superstars over here in North America, and if NASL can really utilize that and play that up and have some great matches, then I wish them the best of luck, and I think it's great for the North American scene. I would love it just to be awesome.
And I mean, I really want to just reiterate kind of what you said in terms of, I don't look at any of these and go, oh, well, that's going to be a boring match to watch. You know, sure, there might be some more one-sided matches than others, but I feel like by the time you get to the quarterfinals, you are not watching a bad match.
Right.
Like, you know, yeah, there might not be legendary, you know, boxer in said matches, but I think that every single player up there, for the most part, earned their spot in here, has been
Absolutely.
Active on the international scene, globally. So
they're all players that I would be interested in watching.
Right.
Every single matchup. That's
yeah.
for sure.
Another thing is, I'm excited to
see some of the Eastern Europeans actually play in a venue over here.
I think every match in NASL is actually best of five, which is something that's really cool. Like even from the
single
start,
limb.
Yeah, single. I like that a lot better than having double limb with best of threes, because it's kind of another way of addressing that issue I'd mentioned back when we were talking about DreamHack format. I really like that. Just it's going to be very hard to lose a match to someone who's much worse than you, which is always something tournaments should aim for.
I like that as well. I think it's really, really solid. And a pretty big map pool as a result of the best of five.
That part kind of sucks. They still have some Noggin and Kerbos in it for some reason.
Yeah.
I would like to step on a sub box for a second. Like,
sure.
Tournaments should fucking remove Zelnaga Caverns. It is a broken map. TBZ win percent should be about 90% on that. It's just like...
It's retarded. Like... You just have to be super cautious and play real slow, grab your third, PF it, and then once you're on three base, like, it doesn't even matter where the Zerg is at. He could play a flawless game, he could be on five base, and you can still win from three base with the gold as Terran.
Yeah,
as long as you just play a real tight game,
you don't lose.
Wall off properly, yeah, it's like impossible. And then there's that giant, like, void chasm over mid, so even if he gets Broodlords out, like, you can just kind of hover your Vikings over the...
My only contribution would be that we're actually, it's almost wasting time to go on to why it's a bad map. I think everyone agrees it's a bad map, which
sure.
is kind of strange that it's still in map pools.
The reason it's still in is because it was introduced back when they had, like, Delta Quadrant and Steps of War and shit in the ladder pool, so Zelnaga seemed relatively good, and everyone was like, hey, this is the first balanced map we have. And for some reason, that mentality is stuck around amongst all the uninformed people who are making decisions.
What about Metalopolis crossed positions gold at rocks?
I think the rocks and the gold are a good decision. That makes Protoss fast. Like, Protoss should not fast expand on there if Zerg can take the gold. That's almost a free win for Zerg. So I think
just
gold and rocks
gold
are good.
Do what GSL is doing. I think gold in general is actually
make
starting
it,
to look
make
closer
it normal.
Yeah.
Normal you drop mules on gold, or you can fast expand to gold as a Zerg player. It's not like it just fucks Protoss over. It's just bad for the games, in my opinion. It's too much.
Yeah, generally speaking, golds should probably be on the way out. Well, metal in particular versus Protoss.
I'm with you as well, though, on Zilnaga. Not a fan.
I tend to agree with that, too, for sure. Especially as Terran. I mean, once you get a position out of gold, and if you just save, like, I don't know, 200, 250 energy on multiple orbitals for a little while, as soon as you establish that position at the gold, if you can hold it for long enough for those mules to make all their trips, and you add production facilities during that time, it gives you a push in your economy that's just absurd at that point in the game. Like, it's ridiculous. And I'm kind of an advocate for normal yield on all maps, too. I wouldn't say it's like... what's up?
I think most of the GSL maps are moving towards that. Like, all the new maps are don't have golds, and they've removed...
Even the old ones, they've removed gold entirely.
Yeah.
All right, well, wanted to mention, guys, in case those in chat who are asking, you can find the coverage page on Team Liquid. If you look at the very, very top of the webpage, there's a little NASL countdown. You can find links to not only all the results throughout the season, which are kind of cool, but also the main brackets, the open, etc. So a lot going into this one by far. And then, of course, you can check out NASL.tv for the live stream as well. And those are the, that's the next big event coming up. And then, Greg, you said you are headed to Korea. And as we make the transition over from, show, I guess, or events to open phones, I'd like to open up the phones. Are you excited? I know we talked about this many, many moons ago, you going to Korea, and you're going to be basically done with NASL. And then what, like a week or two later? Or is it
no,
just a week later?
Me and Huck and Puma are all flying out of NASL immediately to Korea. Me and Huck then go down to WCG in Busan. And
right.
Then all of us are back in the Slayer's house, just practicing like normal. I'm probably going to stay... I'm not sure how long I'm going to stay. I'm aiming for like 3 months. But if something big starts up, like MLG or IPL start their season in February, I'll probably come back for that and stay in the West until I have another opportune time to go to Korea.
Right on. Well, good luck.
Thank you.
I think it'll be interesting to see how your second, I guess, journey out there will be. Mm-hmm. So, let's take some open phones, guys. You can go ahead and you can Skype us at DJ Lead or telephone 909-581-8519. Definitely want to thank everyone who's been tuning in over the last few shows. Sorry that we can't get to every single one of your calls. Let's go ahead and take our first one, though. Let's go ahead. We got Alex on the line. Alex, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, guys. Hope you're all doing good. I'm a big fan. This might be opening a can of worms, but I want to get Idris' thoughts on... Hello?
Yes.
All right, cool. Hope you're all doing good. I'm a big fan. This might be opening a can of worms, but I want to kind of get Idris' thoughts on why he seems to be less successful ZVP versus players like Nesty or Dongregu, Naniwa notwithstanding, and Leenok.
Leenok has like a really, really low win rate ZVP. Like, he doesn't have much success at it at all. And Nesty has played a lot of pretty bad players. Dongregu was known for having a really weak CVP as well. He was a CVT ace for a long time.
All right, how about
so
Stefano?
I think he was wrong. Stefano has said CVP is his weakest as well. I mean, most Zergs aren't very confident versus Protoss, even if they have a high win rate, because it's just so easy to lose at the matchup, regardless of everything else.
We're obviously seeing a lot more early win go get them sort of from the Zerg.
Yeah, ZVP.
Forget all the other players. Like, I'd rather hear Greg just talk about his own personal struggles with the ZVP.
ZVP is a matchup where it's very easy to win games just by doing a timing. Like, if you look at the way Koka plays, he just has like three or four different really strong timing builds where he hits like with a Ling Bane Ling drop or with a three base timing right as they take their third or just various other timings. And if Protoss isn't correctly prepared for that, then they just kind of flat out lose. At least it was that way. It's kind of changing with some of the patches. But if Protoss is prepared, or if Zerg doesn't try one of those timings discussed in the late game, then Protoss gets an incredibly powerful army, and they have warp prisms out, and they have better defensive capabilities, and they just have a better army. Then the matchup gets really, really difficult for Zerg, and I am not a player who really likes depending on my opponent's mistakes and doing timings like that. I much prefer to like try and play a style that can beat anyone no matter what if I am better than them, and that just doesn't work for the way ZVP works. It is much better for ZVT and ZVZ, so that's why I'm relatively better at the other matchups.
Oh, I understand that. I mean, myself, like, full disclosure, I'm a terrible plat Protoss player. But, like, I know there's, like, one point where you reach it in the game and it's like, okay, I've won this game because I've got this amazing army. But when you look at this massive switch over to Mutalisk lately, that seems really focused on just stopping Protoss reaching that point, and it seems really successful. Like, you see even players like Hero just having huge problems with these Mutalisks. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
That's just purely Zerg players avoiding all conflict. That's just pure backstabbing. The Mutalink style. That's just like avoiding fighting, period. You don't engage the Protoss army. You just backstab.
Yeah, Mutas are, basically, if you get them up and you're in a good situation, you just absolutely don't lose. But it's also really easy to get caught with the timing. Or if Protoss already has their third base up before you get Mutas, and they get a Stalker, Templar, Archon, Deathball, before you have a Hive Tech ready to actually defend it, and then you get into a weird base race situation. Mutas are a really easy way to win CVP, but it's much like the timings. It's just like there's also a lot of vulnerabilities. It's not a great, solid, reliable way to win, I don't think. They are good. I mean, I'm not arguing that.
All right, Alex, thank you for your call. Hopefully,
thank you very much.
Got a few things answered there. Thank you very much. Going to take next caller. Actually, many of you guys might know who this is. We got Orb on the line, and actually, Orb has been casting a lot of the NASL this season.
He'll cast the finals.
Yeah. What's up, dude?
Hey, what's going on?
Much. Buddy. Not much. You excited for this weekend?
Hell yeah, man. It's going to be freaking awesome. Flying out tomorrow. When are you going to get there?
I also fly out tomorrow, so I get in around 6:30, and then I think we have a late night live on 3, so maybe if you want to join me for that, we'll do that.
Oh, I would love to, man.
All right. That'd be all great. Right on. What's up?
Oh, man. Well, I was watching the show, and I saw you guys talking about NASL. I just figured, you know, maybe I could call in, just give my thoughts on some of the things you were talking about.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Please do.
Well, you know, I see a lot of people, like, I've been watching the chat and everything, you know. I've always watched, like, people, some of their complaints about the format that we talked about, that you guys talked about. You know, the single elimination thing versus double elimination, best of five, best of seven. One of the things that leads into that, that I think is really cool about NASL, is that, you know, a lot of people maybe don't like watching the league every week quite as much. But what that does is you have so many games from these players going into the finals. You really get to see the top players from each group coming in, so you already have like kind of a seeding based on how well the players have done, and that kind of just allows you, I feel, to go into a single elimination format with just a little bit more fairness than, you know, maybe like an invite-only tournament where you're just having a kind of random seeding, but it's only single elimination. And it's also, as you know, as Greg said, it's best of five, and even once you get to the semifinals, it's best of seven from there. So yeah, I'm pretty excited about that. And on top of that, you know, they're inviting so many casters, which is freaking awesome, you know, for the scene, that many casters are, you know, getting work from this, as well as the fact that, you know, if you have like a favorite caster, something like that, you're gonna get to see them, you know, at this tournament, because there are just, you know, so many people coming. And also I just wanted to touch on the maps thing, because that is something that I've been really fighting for and trying to work towards. And, you know, obviously they didn't want to change
right.
It mid-season. That was the problem. It's a long season. You know, they had Zelnaga from the beginning, etc. But you know what? That's the reason why they started putting in new maps for the semi-open, is that they want to actually test out some new maps and bring them in for the next season, see what's good before they actually bring them in for pro players to be playing on for those league matches. So, I don't know. Hopefully that'll, you know, rectify some of the issues that people have been having with NASL.
Yeah, get rid of Zelnaga.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you on that one.
Occupy Zelnaga cabinet.
Oh, God. That's gotta go.
That's gotta go. Awesome. So, just real quickly then, Orb, who do you think, like, who do you have, like, pegged as a favorite here?
Oh, man, my heart wants to say Huck. But, you know, I'm just a big EG fan, and also you, Idra. But realistically, it's just so hard to say. Like, there's so many amazing players in this tournament. Granted, not, you know, not the amazing Koreans, but still the amazing, like, top foreigners, so... It really could
go
anywhere.
Throw a Hero out there as a clear favorite, though, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
All right. Well, Orb, I look forward to seeing you then in probably about 24 hours or so. So
yeah, you as well, man.
All right.
Thanks for bringing me on.
Right on, man. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate it. Take
Later.
Care. Bye-bye. All right. Let's take another one. We've got Steven on the line. Steven, hello. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey, I just wanted to get your thoughts on bias in casting. A lot of the complaints that are thrown out regularly is that, you know, this caster's biased in this game or whatever. Just wanted to know what you guys think about it and if it even matters at all.
I personally get that all the time, formerly being a pro Terran player. So I obviously understand more about the Terran matchups, but I kind of addressed this earlier on in the when we were talking about it. Like, I've put a lot of study time into the other matchups, and I understand them much more in depth now than I did before, and it's something that I put a lot of time into. So I try and be as unbiased as possible during my casts, and there's always going to be a slight bias there because I'm obviously more comfortable discussing Terran build orders, strategies, matchups. But I certainly think that as a caster, that's like, if that's your job, like, I'm casting now full time, so it's my job to understand the other matchups. I don't think that necessarily playing the other, like, a lot of casters try and play random for a long period of time and get to a higher level in each of the races. I don't think that's necessarily that important. Once you understand the game at like a really, really high level, you can watch enough games of the other matchups and really learn how they're played and the different styles. So I don't know. I think all casters that were formerly pros of a specific race are going to have a slight bias and they're going to get flack for it, but it's definitely something I've worked on. I think I was a lot more biased at first when I first started out casting, and now I've kind of like eased off it, especially based on like the reactions from fans of my own and like messages that I've gotten from friends and stuff like that. So that's my two cents on it.
What about player bias, right? What do you think about that?
Like, players that I'm like personal friends with that I'm casting a game, and
there's some casts, right, where, you know, obviously everyone's kind of cheering for a certain player, so they'll get a little bit, I don't know, it just feels a little bit more biased. To be honest, my own personal opinion, I think bias in casting is a lot of bullshit. Nobody should really give too much about it, but I just wanted to know your guys' thoughts.
Hey, Steven, can you give like a specific example? And you don't need to like name names, but you could just say, in this one, you know, cast, this person was being incredibly biased towards this player. Like, do you really feel like this is like a major issue amongst casting?
People talk about it.
Personally, I don't think it's a major issue, but it's one of those things like where I'm constantly going like through Reddit and, you know, reading about different games and stuff like that, and it's a common kind of complaint that people have. Yeah. I just wanted to know what your guys' thoughts were on it. Personally, I don't care, right? I don't think it changes the game at all.
Sure.
It doesn't change how, you know, enjoyable the game is to me, but it's one of those things where it's a kind of a common complaint by the community.
Well, and I just want to throw this out here, right, because I've been like on the soapbox about like creating storylines and shit for the last month and stuff, right? And this last MLG, there were a lot of really good storylines. And so with that being said, when you've got a situation where you're building up a storyline and it's like, you know, let's take that Forbes guy. How in the did this person get in the... Take this Forbes guy, right? Sorry about that. Forbes was sort of a, you know, a Cinderella story coming into it. So had we done a Forbes versus MC matchup, and Forbes would have had these, like, amazing games versus MC, I could maybe guess, because of the story that was being told, there might be some bias in Forbes' side because he is the Cinderella story to be told. But I don't necessarily think that that's, like, a bad thing, because that didn't make MC lose any fans. Or, you know what I mean? Like, I don't see it strong enough where I'm like, holy shit. Like, you know, like, I almost laugh at it. Like, you take Artosis and Tasteless and Clyde or Nesty, you know? It's like, that's almost funny, you know? I don't know.
And it's one of those things, too. Like, I always read these threads and stuff like that, but I feel like the community or a certain part of the community doesn't understand that, you know, part of it is just building up hype, right? Like, I probably wouldn't care too much about, you know, whoever NestT is playing, right, if it wasn't hyped up a bit, right? Like, you know, a lot of the matches need to be hyped up. But it's also, like, the reason why I'm asking the question is that after the Jakshi game, they were translating the interview, and Jakshi said that Artosis's casting was biased, right?
Right.
And, you know, that's kind of why I'm asking.
Okay, I got you. Fair enough. Well, hopefully it won't be an issue, and we'll just enjoy casting. So thanks, Steven. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
In control, you look almost like unnerved from that call.
It's, I don't know. That subject is, like he said, he didn't have a problem with it. What he's basically talking about is the 35 posts you'll get in a 300-page live report thread or the stream chat of any of these things. People look for reasons to nitpick the commentators, and one of the common things is if a player transitions to commentating, they always assume that there's a bias towards that race.
Sure.
And a lot of players joke about that bias, but then the problem is, and I guess the players are just, or the player slash commentators just as much to blame, people can't distinguish between their joking about the bias and then them being capable of commentating on other races. Like, so often do I read when, you know, during the Masters Cup when we're commentating, they're like, Pain User doesn't know shit about Protoss, or In Control doesn't always talking about Idris the Zerg player, and it's like, I don't know, it's just kind of annoying. It's propped up by the community than
sure.
the casters ever would, in my opinion. So when he calls up and says, does it bother you guys? Do you think this exists? You're not gonna go talk to Taste Dosis and they're gonna be like, yeah, really, I think bias is doesn't exist, and it's a, you know, like, obviously they're gonna say it does, but they joke around about it, so
sure.
It's weird that people can't click into that.
I almost just embrace it a little bit. You know, I think it's kind of fun in that regard, but you know, hopefully it's not pissing anyone off. We got area code 541 on the line. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game, what's your question?
Hey, so I was wondering if you guys ever get annoyed when people talk about bringing back Brood War units to balance the game, because it's like, it's StarCraft 2, it's not StarCraft 1 expansion, and I was just wondering if that ever annoyed you guys.
The only thing, well, I don't know, I've said this many times before, but I think some of the units that they chose to remove, as opposed to the units that they kept, were, like, totally awesome units. Like, the Vulture, the Reaver, the Lurker. Three awesome units that required a ton of micro. They were super complex. And, you know, you replaced them with the Hellion, the Colossus, and I guess, like, the Roach. But these are all units that require, like, right-click, hold position micro, and, like, stutter step micro. It's not the same as, like, picking up a Reaver and dropping it in between shots and picking it up and microing every individual shot. It's not the same as, like, surrounding a bunch of Dragoons and splitting your Vultures and dropping Spider Mines around them in circles. It's not the same as holding territory with Lurkers and using Dark Swarm and stuff like that. Like, the dynamic between those units is what made Brood War such a special game, and they removed them. And they kept, like, the basic units that I guess were, like, the hallmark units of each race. And added some more simplistic units that I don't really think add a lot of spice to the game. And that's the only thing I don't like. So when people suggest bringing back units like the ones I just mentioned, I'm all for it. But other than that, I don't really have much more to say about it. I'm not really happy with the units that they did add.
Greg, or In Control, you have anything to add to this?
I'd agree. I mean, I think those units were better than their apparent counterparts, StarCraft 2. I think they would make for a better game if they hadn't removed them. And obviously there's units like the Scout or the Old Ghost or whatever, where it was good they removed them. They didn't have a place in the game. So those were positive changes. But to just say you shouldn't bring something back because it was in StarCraft 1, like half or more of the units we have are from StarCraft 1.
Right.
It is StarCraft 2. There's nothing wrong with having some similar or the same units, especially if they were good at what they did. They made for a good game.
And Jeff,
I don't know. I think it's kind of like, I understand speculating between the two, and I understand the conversation, but the units just fuck up the game so much that I can't help but to be like, yeah, it's fun to talk about, but to bring them back or whatever would be a completely separate game. It just would. Like, can you imagine Protoss with a Reaver in the way that units clump up these days? I'm sitting next to the guy who would cry buckets and buckets of tears as his Roaches and Hydralisks and whatever the hell else he makes are absolutely obliterated in two shots by, you know, like, by these Reavers. And then the Lurker, I'm trying to imagine how, with the way the game is, how that could ever function. It would absolutely trash ZVT. I mean, you could just go down the list. And in my opinion, if we wanted to redo StarCraft II and bring those units in and balance it around them, I would be okay with that scenario. But we'd have to go back in time a year and a half. And that's why this conversation to me is a little bit odd, because it doesn't take shape or form in reality. Right. But it's cool. I mean, it would be cool if we had them, but we don't, and I don't know what we can do to talk about it.
For me, it's like a question of fun. Those units are way more fun to actually play with.
Skill level too, like,
and
Vulture control versus Hellion control and Hellion usage and whatnot. It was just way harder to use really well and way easier to fail with, which is a very good thing.
Well, thank you very much for your call, sir. Yep, have a good one. We're going to try to take a few more here as we gear up for the end of the show. Let's take another one here from area code 804. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey guys, I have a pretty much general question for all you guys. I'm a High Masters player, and I was hoping I could get your guys' advice on how to approach the process of getting on a well-established team and competing in those big tournaments.
I get asked that question a lot, and actually, if I could, hopefully you don't mind, I'm going to take your question and expand it. How does a person become a professional player? So just, you know, a lot of people talk about getting on a team, but even beyond that, it's just, how do I pay for my living?
Sure.
Through this. Gray, if you do me a favor, mute your mic real quick. So I guess the way to go about this is, first and foremost, you have to understand what it takes to be a professional player. And this is why so many people are young people that are brought up and then become professional players. It's not because they're faster moving or they're limber of body. It's because they don't have obligations like a job they need to work, or a college they need to attend, or a serious girlfriend they might marry, or a family to support, or themselves to support. They actually just have their free time and maybe high school or middle school to take care of. Probably high school for us Westerners. It takes about 10 hours a day, somewhere in that realm. It can be as low as 8, and it can be as much as 12, but it's usually not much more beyond either of those. So for someone to look at their schedule and say, I can do that, that's like the 1% of the players, the very few, and that's why there's so few professional players. The next thing is that there's a lot of luck involved. You can do okay in tournaments. You can take 32nd at MLG and be a Vile Illusion and get your name mentioned and stuff like that. Or you can never do that ever because it's a really hard tournament. Maybe you're the guy that hit an ST in the second round and nobody remembers you. When you stream, nobody gives a shit. You've got 15 people watching you at the very most, unless you stream in tournaments with commentary, uploading your replays, sharing, tweeting, YouTubing, everything you possibly can to get your name out there. Now you have 100 people watching you. Congrats. 100 people is not going to do anything unless you hit it big somewhere. So there's a lot of luck involved. It's really difficult. It takes a lot of time. And you have to have a situation in life where you can designate that much time to something like that. So when you ask me, you know, I'm a high-ish Masters player, how do I get onto a professional team? The fact of the matter is, there's hundreds, if not, there's thousands of high Masters players. What distinguishes you from everybody else? For a lot of us Western players, that's personality, that is play style, that's success or achievements. If you don't have those things in spades to discern yourself from everybody else, I don't know what I can tell you, because there's Grandmasters players in the same situation you are, and I would tell them the same thing. So the best thing people can do for themselves is start to create that, first of all, they have to get past the first barrier. Do you have the time? Do you have the ability to designate to that? If you do, okay. The next thing, do you have a Twitter? Do you have a YouTube? When you stream, are you doing everything you can to attract followers? Meaning, are you commentating? Are you playing music? Do you upload your replays? Do you interact with people? Are you streaming coaching lessons? If you say no to any of the above, then you are, just like a resume, one notch lower than everybody else who's doing those things. And then the next thing is results. You have to go out and get results. So play him daily, EU daily for play him, the weekend tournaments, MLGs, you got to attend every single one of those. If you make a big run, a team will recognize you. And then you got to catch opportunities. Complexity has an academy. Another team has an academy. It's eluding me right now. But there are these upstart programs. You have to be doing all the above. And, like, I've been asked this a lot, so I'm glad you asked it here because there's a little bit of a platform for this. If you can't answer, like, if the harsh reality is if you don't have the ability to do those things and the first barrier is that 10-hour thing, then play this game, enjoy it, have fun, but do not tell yourself that I think you can go pro because it maybe you can, but it would be like getting hit by lightning. It would be really rare. Sorry, Greg. Yeah. Thank you.
Any follow-up questions, caller, to that? Or does that... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, kind of. Like, I really appreciate that answer. That really answered a lot for me. But about the whole team thing, is it really that necessary to get onto a team to make it tough? Like, do you approach teams or do they approach you? Like, what do you think about that?
I mean... That'll evolve in and of itself. Like, as you get good and as you get better, in order to get better, you have to acquire practice partners. You have to find intelligent people that you can play and discuss the game with, and guaranteed some of those guys will already be on well-established teams if you're at a point where you're that good. Like, you'll be meeting people, you'll be interacting with people. They will become your friends over time if you play enough and you play custom games together and you talk about the game. And by osmosis, you will eventually get on a team. It's just, like, everything Jeff said is 100% true. Just to simplify the answer, if you play a lot and you get really good, a lot of those things that Jeff said that you need to go after and pursue will kind of happen on the, you just need to get good.
And, you know, with that being said, to kind of, like, take a middle ground between both of you guys, there's nothing wrong with joining an up-and-coming team. Like, every single player is not going to join an EG, is not going to join a Team Liquid. But traditionally, through the history of esports, look at how many teams started as just a, you know, what people would consider a, you know, a B team, which, you know, ends up becoming an A team. There's no doubt about it. If you look at the history of Evil Geniuses, at one point they were just kind of like a decent Counter-Strike team. Now look where they're at and what they've established. You know, you take a look at some of the other clans or teams out there, specifically to StarCraft II, and you see similar things. You know, like, I mean, I don't think that anyone should be scared to be joining a team or starting a new team if you're willing to put in the work that Jeff was talking about the sponsors and finding a way to sort of sustain yourself. So
you ask, you know, do I need a team to get that recognition? A team helps with those things. Your number one priority, be it with who you train with, what team you're on, should be that they're better than you. If you're getting your ass handed to you by people that'll give you feedback and talk to you about what you could do better,
absolutely,
you're able to ask them questions, then you are in a winning situation. You don't have to be on a team that is at the top tier, but if that team has players that are better than you and they're willing to work with you, that is the example you want. I mean, every player here, and I could do a history lesson. My lesson was Testy back in the day in Brood War, in StarCraft actually is where we started. He kicked my ass for several years, just annihilated me. The record was like 250-3, something like that. But he would tell me what I did wrong, what I need to work on. He would introduce me to other top players, and I'd get my ass handed to me by them. And then after a couple of years, I eventually started winning some games, doing okay, and going out and doing well for myself. And that's obviously an anomaly or a strange example. But like Idra, actually, Idra used to train with Sven, Rhett, and other players. And for the beginning of his career, they did very well against him. And eventually, he started to kick their ass. And that's kind of how it works for most top players. So that can be a team or that can be a training community. But in either case, you need to get your ass kicked.
Yeah.
Yeah, the practice is really just the biggest part. I mean, at that point, you're not going to be getting on a team that's going to fly you to European events or provide you with a salary that you can live on or anything. At that point, it's still about building up. So it's just finding a team that will give you practice, not finding a team that will make you something. You have to make yourself at that point.
Cool. All right, thanks a lot, guys. I really appreciate the response.
Take
a lot
care,
of questions.
And good luck, sir. I know there's a lot of folks out there trying to follow in those footsteps, and it's certainly not going to be an easy road. But
I get asked that one a lot, and I understand. I mean, playing this game for a living is a dream come true. It's awesome.
Absolutely, man.
It's a tough nut to crack. So,
but at the same time, people should really heed your guys' words. I mean,
it is possible, but it's a time commitment, and that's something that a lot of people like. That's such an alienating thing.
Time commitment.
I mean, if you have a family, unless you have, you know, a robot maid staff, I don't know how you're going to do it.
If you have a family, I can just tell you right now that you could probably apply yourself to like StarCraft or esports in a lot better ways that will make you not go insane trying to reach unachievable goals. And, you know, I mean, I don't know. From one family guy to all the rest of them out there. I feel like you do got to start a little bit younger.
For a lot of us, like, I don't know. I've been playing competitive games since I was, like, 13. I think it started for all of us a long, long, long time ago. If you're jumping in now, kudos. Good luck. It's a grind.
And it'll happen.
If you have no experience, it can happen.
But how many Linux are there going to be?
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
Very rare thing. I mean, it's like a combination of things, right? Like Lenok already had talent, and then he's in a position like Jeff said, where he can just devote his entire life, to start too.
Sure.
Not everybody's in that position.
Right. No. If
you look at foreign players, I mean, there haven't been that many new players to rise up to the top level. Period. Besides Stefano, the people winning are still pretty much the people who are winning pretty early on from release. It's really hard to break into the top, no matter what, regardless of time restraints.
Well,
and just so people don't misunderstand that point, there are examples of people doing it, but what Greg's point is of the thousands of people playing, the fact that we can name the three or four people is his point. It's very hard to do.
Or you can just, you know, continue to not spend all that time and go to sleep and be a StarCraft pro and win all the competitions in your dreams, and then it's, you know, the next best thing. Let's take our next and last caller, guys. It's the one and only Goat Lust. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game, sir.
Yes.
Oh, get on my hell, eh?
I'm doing good. How are you, sir?
Oh, yeah, not too bad. How's my mic sound?
It sounds great. Why, did you get a new mic?
Did you get a new mic?
Oh, I got a shit one because my other one fucked up. I've had to plug a shit one in, but yeah.
It actually sounds almost pretty
That's
much
just
the same.
As good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Same deal.
Yeah, sorry to disappoint you that your mic's not really shit, but what's up, buddy?
Not a whole lot.
What do you got for us this week?
Well, first up, I wanted to touch on that bias in casters sort of bullshit you were talking about earlier.
Sure.
And I agree that for the most part, like, it doesn't really bother anyone if, you know, Artosis is real big on Clyde or any of that sort of bullshit. But one thing that absolutely shits me to tears is when a caster is, like, really against a certain player. Like, some of those casters out there are just legitimately fucking stoked when, like, Idra gets a whole line of drones fucking burnt by Hellions and stuff. Like, there's just a few casters out there who seem to, like, you know, hate on Idra, that sort of thing.
First of all, shits me to tears is, I'm stealing that from you. And second of all, I totally agree with you, but do you see any of those casters, like, casting major events or anything like that? I know,
Yeah.
Husky. Aside from Husky, I feel like a lot of those casters are, like, guys that just kind of run those, like, daily streams and put in a lot of time and effort, and they look at Idra from, like a fanboy perspective, and they love the drama, you know? Every time Idra leaves a game early, it's like, oh my god! It's like, they kind of are, in a way, I guess, trying to promote that drama and like, move on to that drama. I don't know. I don't think a lot of the casters casting major events do that too much. I don't know, though. Yeah. I think I definitely get a little excited when Idra leaves the game early, or when when his entire drone line gets fried by some blue flame hellions, but I certainly won't, like, just call it out on stream, but I always enjoy that a little bit. What
about
you,
Wade? When someone is literally fucking just delighted, that is when, like, it actually ruins the experience, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, so when I celebrate because I see some fucking banelings blow up a bunch of shit, is that what you're talking about? Like, I mean, I'm generally excited just because I saw banelings fuck some shit up. But, like, because I'm like, oh my god, that, you know, it's just, like, getting exciting over it. Is that what you're talking about, or...
No, or no, think, no. Like, just like those really people just who sort of single shit. A few okay. people out.
Okay. I gotcha. Well, yeah, you had something else too, right?
All right. Yeah. I was just touching on that before I asked my little question. How much do you think adrenaline can sort of push a player in, like, at a certain tournament to play above their usual level? Like sometimes adrenaline does a lot of stuff for someone's focus. Like, say you're taking a driving test or something and you would just absolutely fucking nail it, that sort of thing. Do you think that happens, or do you know that happens?
Like lifting cars and shit? Like, you got in an accident, it's like, oh, the adrenaline's kicking in, I'm gonna lift this car up, this old lady. But suddenly, instead, it's like, oh my god, I'm gonna have the best blink micro stalker or blink stalker micro that anyone's ever seen. Like,
I think it's a really good question.
I think so too.
Jeff and Greg,
adrenaline.
I don't. Adrenaline is great for, like, a physical sport. You want to go hit someone as hard as you can. Then yeah, you want to be pumped up. You want to kick their ass. But for something that's much more fine tuned, much more mental or coordination focused, I think it's more likely to mess you up than it is to help you. I mean, there are people where it serves just the right purpose. It sharpens you mentally, but it doesn't make you erratic physically. It doesn't make it harder to be coordinated, and for them it's awesome. But I mean, like, I know Machine is actually the first example. He did a lot of sports, wrestling, football and stuff in college or high school, and he would get himself pumped up before the matches. That'd be perfect for him. And then going into StarCraft 2, he would, like, listen to death metal and stuff before his matches and get himself into that same mentality, and it would just completely fuck him up, because that's not where you should be for a StarCraft match. Then he stopped doing that and he got a lot better, because he was much calmer, much more focused, much more prepared, and not all amped up on adrenaline. So I think most of the time you don't really want to be psyched up going into a match.
What do you think, Jeff?
Well, the big thing here is that, like, one of the best examples that I can take is from my own history in playing football, and to compare that to StarCraft 2. Football is a game of explosive activity, right? There's a lot of huddle where you take a break, and then you walk into the line, and it's, you know, you're kind of sizing up the play. But then the play itself lasts anywhere between 5-15 seconds on average. So it's very short and explosive. So adrenaline helps you there, because you're trying to move really fast all of a sudden for very short periods of time. Whereas StarCraft 2 has a huge marathon element to it. If you're even playing one important series, like let's say it's a best of five, that still is a good hour and a half of prolonged activity where there's not a whole lot of downtime. You're trying to focus, and you're trying to concentrate for most of that, and that's really difficult. So if you're all amped up and jacked, you can actually exhaust yourself, which then limits your ability to think clearly and to operate in StarCraft 2 effectively. And I think a lot of us with sports backgrounds have made that journey. I know myself I have. I used to listen to just crazy metal, and I would pace back and forth and get really jacked up because that's how I knew to prepare for an event. But in StarCraft 2, now I'm listening to frickin' Alanis Morissette and shit. I'm trying to calm the hell down. And, trying Trance. To focus and stay much more calm so I can focus better and play better.
What, so you had to bench the black metal, did ya?
You got rid of it.
What's up?
Yeah. I didn't get rid of it. Listen to it.
Oh, prior
just not,
to.
Just I don't, like, get into the metal mood type of thing.
Pain user, coming from an FPS background, I have a feeling you might have a little bit different answer, because,
well,
maybe not. I don't know. What do you think?
No, I do. I played sports too. I wrestled for 10 years, just like Bryce. But I think with Bryce, and I know Bryce, like, he's a personal friend of my machine. I think that's more like nerves for me in StarCraft. Adrenaline helps me a lot, but that's just adrenaline. It doesn't get me shaky. It doesn't rock my nerves. But I know in certain games that I've played in really important matches and tournaments and stuff, when I get down in a game and I know I'm behind, my adrenaline kicks in and I start playing faster and I start playing. I get in the zone. So for me personally, it's a good thing. It's like a good kind of nervous energy. Sometimes at tournaments, I have bad energy, like a bad nervousness, but that's not adrenaline. That's just straight up nerves. But I think when you're in the heat of a match, and your adrenaline kicks in, I don't think that it's a bad thing. And then as far as psyching yourself up and like the type of music you prefer or whatever, I think anything to get you pumped up and in the zone is definitely good, but I kind of agree with what Jeff said. You can definitely over prepare as well. If you're pacing around and you're getting amped up physically, you can over prepare. But if you can relax and just kind of stay in the zone and harness the nervous energy in a good way, then I think that's the best thing. But I definitely think adrenaline plays a huge role. For Greg, I don't know. I can't tell with Greg whether adrenaline even plays a factor or not. He's a stone cold killer. But I think with certain people, it definitely plays a role, and they get more emotional when they play. And I'm definitely an emotional player. Like I get pissed in the middle of games. I get excited in the middle of games. But for me, adrenaline's definitely good. It helps me.
And I would guess that every single player sort of has a different, take on that. Because we've certainly seen those ice cold players before. But it's a good question, Goatless, and I appreciate your call as always.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, that was pretty interesting. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, sir. Appreciate it. Have a good one. And that was Goatless, ladies and gentlemen.
Dude, I think Goatless is just killing it with the questions. I think every week he's taking like a...
He realizes he has a responsibility now. And he doesn't want to let anyone down because you know what will happen. Like the first time, it'll be like, Goatless asked the shittiest questions on ITG Reddit, number one post, boom. Done deal. And it's like... No more.
I think so far so good though, right? Goatless hasn't let us down yet.
For the most part, yeah. I think he's done a good job. I think he's done
this
good
is
job.
First question that just got us all so enamored with him. I can't remember.
Well, I don't know what the first question was, but when he asked about if you were going to take one StarCraft II player on an island with you, I thought that was a really good job by him. So, we got to wrap up. Miniweek got his cast on today. He's like got this weird bone, like extra. No, he's in a splint.
Oh, okay.
So we were like investigating. You could actually like feel the bone. It's really fucking actually really weird. But
I guess, how did he actually break it? I don't think you ever told me.
Dude, being a freaking kindergartner, like how do you break shit? You like a girl scares him, he falls over backwards. That was the story I heard.
I've never broken a bone. I'm one of those lucky people.
Yeah, so a lot of kids breaking their arms, apparently, says my wife at the ER. Yeah.
Right now. We'll see.
I never broke anything, so or got stitches or anything, so I don't know what that world is all like. I'm knocking on wood like crazy right now.
I have no idea what that is.
You what?
I can't break.
You're unbreakable. Let's wrap things up, guys. Final shout-outs, final thoughts. We'll start with you, Pain User. Go.
Oh, God. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Appreciate it. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at PainUser. Big shout-outs to IGN and the IPL, where I work. You can find us at www.ign.com/IPL. Big shout-outs to my team, Check 6, for sending me to events, and all my buddies on the team, and our sponsors, TT Esports, Pure Trek, and Gamers Uniform. Thanks, you guys, for having me on the show. Thanks, Wheat, for hosting. And I'll catch you guys next week, next Tuesday.
Excellent, sir. Adra?
Thanks to all our fans, supporters, viewers, everyone else. Team Evil Geniuses, my teammates, our sponsors, Intel SteelSeries, Monster, Kingston HyperX, Beyond Gaming, everyone else over at MyAG.net. Thank you to all of them.
Thank you, sir. In Control?
Same, obviously. Wonderful team, wonderful sponsors. Thank you all. You know, this we're coming up on a big break for some of us that don't have to take over the world like Greg. So December's going to be nice. I'm going to go see the family. I'm also going to be tweeting about playing other video games. Let's get it out right now. Get it out there. Put it out there. Okay? I got Skyrim I got to beat. Space 2. I know. Let's go. Get it all out there.
Dead Space 2. You're supposed to be a professional StarCraft 2.
Going to play some Modern Warfare 3.
Fucking killing dragons won't help you with your Killies.
Going to be putting some models together. Going to see my family. I haven't seen my mom in 6 months. Pretty happy, you know. Gonna do some resetting, some calming down, so that 2012 can add some wins under the belt. I did the losing thing in 2011 for a few tournaments. it was actually an undercover experiment. Just trying it out, seeing what it felt like. Don't like it. Gonna be done with that. So 2012.
Jeff, I might hop on the train with you, man. I'm gonna start playing again.
Hey, you know what, Jeff? If it makes you feel any better, I have fond memories of you in base proxy pyloning TLO. And so, you know, since I mentioned the Xenia thing, I thought I should mention that, you know, I don't really have that many memories of you losing, but I really have a fond memory of you doing that to TLO, so... I don't know.
TLO's a class act, too, because the second time I did it to him, you would think that would be a time for someone to flip their table. I mean, Greg, what would you do? What would you actually do if that happened to you?
Hmm?
If someone snuck a pylon in your base and beat you two times in a row with it?
I wouldn't let that happen, because I'm not terrible.
And he'd pull a cat in half is the actual answer. He would reach over, pull a cat, stroke it, and then pull it in half. And then,
even Hobbs?
No, not Hobbs. Silly man.
Poa would get pulled
maybe
in half.
I would do that for free.
But anyways, that was a class act. He actually types up, just says, I'm going to be checking under my bed for pylons because of this game. And he was able to have fun with it, so thank you to that. But I'm going to play some games, see the fam. Still playing StarCraft. I have the December 10th, I'm doing a thing called Rumble in the Bronze, which is where I get to commentate a bunch of bronze players playing StarCraft.
Oh, dude.
They've actually told me to make fun of them.
Really?
So there's actually no... Okay, I get to make fun of them. I get to be as funny and mean as I want, but it's for a good cause. I'm going to be donating to a hospital, and I believe Child's Play as well. So tune in, donate, join the stream, but it's a big charity event. Something that I last year, and they
I was going to say, isn't this like the second year that they've done this? Yeah, you did it last year too. Yeah, I remember that shit.
So I'll be tweeting links and stuff. There is a thread on Team Liquid, but please give them a big turnout. They actually are producing some content that's really freaking funny. They're a good group of guys. They're all, I think they're actually, I'm not going to tell the top what community they're from because they'll hate me because I'm not going to be quite sure. But there are a bunch of guys that really take this series and put on a big production, so hopefully we can
from
turn out...
From Penny Arcade Forums, right?
What? Penny Arcade, thank you. That's where they're from.
Look at
what kind of funny are we talking about here? Are we talking, like, shitting you to tears funny, or...
I'm talking a guy like ropes mining 7,000 worlds, and he's micering the shit out of his two zealots against the Marine Market. Like, where I get... I just make fun of them ruthlessly, but they're having fun with it because they know they're not very good. So it's, and also they know like that I've been asked to make fun of them. So it's a lot of fun. If you like my cynical commentating, when I kind of, this is me taking the gloves off, like, whatever I want. In the Docs tournament in the next week or so, it's the Sea Surf tournament put on by Docs, who's one of the guys who organized in some way the NFL Fall Party. Go so well. He's actually really good at what he does. He wasn't a part of the big hoopla. You know, cheer me on. And
that'd
then,
awesome.
2012, January, everything bigger. I see it. Just the stuff that people have been talking about. And then all the stuff we need to talk about. MLG has said we want to get bigger. You know, IPL is talking about Vegas. Some of these other tournaments are, you know, DreamHack is creeping around. It's going to be pretty big.
Yeah.
Excited.
It's It's going to get crazy up in here.
So, look for some Skyrim tweets. And again, if we're mad about it, if we're upset about it, get the tweets out now.
Yep.
You know, you didn't do so good in 2011. Come on, just get them all out there now, because the closer we get to Christmas, the more you're going to hell if you say stuff like that. So.
That's right. He knows when you've been sleeping. He knows when you're awake. All right, great. Well, I'll be watching. Just see how that's going for you. If you're, like, banging your head against the table or anything like that. But it sounds like it could be fun. With that being said, I want to thank everyone for tuning in to Inside the Game this week. Don't forget to check out Indra this weekend at the NASL Finals. You'll be able to find it at NASL.tv. So please, if you're in the area, also get yourself some tickets, head on over. I'll be down there casting, looking very much forward to working with the NASL crew officially for the first event. So I want to thank them for bringing me out, and really look forward to the great games that'll be coming. Tomorrow we will be having a late night live on 3, so you'll be wanting to watch the onemoregame.tv Twitter or my Twitter at DJ Wheat. And I just want to say thank you once again, guys. I appreciate you taking your time out of you know, casting for IPL, doing your competitions, Jeff playing Skyrim and slaying dragons, you know, doing this great show for the community. So thank you once again, guys, and we will see you next time for another episode of Inside the Game. We're out of here. And fuck Slasher.
Fuck Slasher. Jeff stole it. It was coming out of my mouth. I was right there. Tweet it.
We're out of here. Peace.